One of the major collections at the St. Louis Art Museum is the Max Beckmann Collection, 39 of the German artist's 20th century paintings. The Beckmann connection with St. Louis goes beyond the collection. We can connect the dots between the collection, Beckmann's relationship with Morton May of St. Louis, and the time Beckmann taught at Washington University. All of this in part thanks to Adolf Hitler. The story is told in the coffee table book, Max Beckmann at the St. Louis Art Museum, which focuses on the museum's collection. The author is Lynette Roth, the Daimler-Benz curator of the Busch Reisinger Museum at Harvard Art Museums and former Mellon Fellow at the St. Louis Art Museum. Lynette, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on this book. It's one of the most handsome coffee table books I've ever seen. And it's not just a bunch of pictures either. There's an awful lot of text in there, representing a lot of work.
Indeed, indeed.
What makes Max Beckmann so exceptional, and why were you so drawn to him?
Well, I mean, really, Don, the most exciting thing I think about Beckmann's work, and the reason that so many people just, you know, return to it again and again, and in St. Louis really have that incredibly special opportunity to do so in the museum, is because it really leaves us with often a lot more questions than it does answers. And his iconography, his sort of visual language, his formal shifts and changes, in the course of, 50 years of painting, are just so rich. And that was really, one of the things that convinced me to, in the time in 2008, to move to St. Louis and tackle the work on the collection.
He has been called an expressionist, and I think with fairly good reason. However, that's a term to which he took exception.
That's right. I outline that some in the book, basically, as far as Beckmann was concerned, he was not an expressionist. And in fact, that was one of the points that I make in trying to sort of track, why we as Americans in many ways have come to understood him as an expressionist. And a lot of that has to do with really the reception of German art more broadly here in the U.S. And so Beckmann kind of gets lumped in a way with an idea of German art that's expressive, subjective, that's content-driven. Not that he was completely an outlier. He, looked to his contemporaries. He looked to artists living and dead. The term expressionist is not only technically, historically incorrect, but I think it also underestimates the diversity of his work more broadly.
The trained eye can no doubt see more than the untrained eye when it comes to evaluating art. My eye is untrained, and what I'm seeing is not a whole lot of difference between the early Beckmann and that which came later. How is it different?
That's a great question, actually. Really Beckmann's formal changes, from the very early years and sort of before the First World War, he's painting also these incredibly thickly painted canvases with a lot of sort of big themes, sort of grand themes, and that was really the sort of manner of painting at the time. It's been referred to as Impressionist, and his contemporaries in Berlin were painting very similarly. And as we sort of continue on in his career, he uses to a certain extent different kinds of color, paint application, but also his themes get increasingly more hermetic. And so that's really a change I think we see maybe in the 1930s, 1940s. And in the United States, his colors actually become much more vibrant and dissonant, almost garish colors. Some people say some of those later works are, more difficult to look at in a way because we're not used to seeing, color like that on a canvas. So he's really, at every, I'd say every decade, there's kind of a new sort of energy and new different kind of approach to painting. And that's, again, what makes the St. Louis collection so special, because you can really see those changes within, one museum collection.
What I also see is I see a lot of nudes, which is not unusual for many artists. I see a lot of references to the sea, the ocean, and
yes,
beaches, if you will. But but I see most of all an extraordinary number of self-portraits. That really has struck me, how many of those that he did of himself.
Oh, he did. He loved more than anything. I mean, next to the female nude, he loved to portray himself. And there are more than 40 self-portraits on canvas that Max Beckmann did of himself. And it's almost an area of study unto itself, because they're so fascinating and enigmatic, and really, you know, give us a sense of this, you know, not just changing artists, but really changing man throughout the first half of the 20th century.
Does it tell us anything about him?
Sure. I think, you know, some of the... I mean, I guess to point to the St. Louis collection, the final self-portrait tells us quite a bit about him. He's by that time 65 years old. He would have been at the time, and looking back, I think in America at a very long career, and dies actually shortly after that canvas was painted, and we sort of see, you know, we see when we look at that canvas, not this kind of, you know, virile, young, sort of confident man that we see in his early self-portraits. We see, you know, a more thoughtful, almost I would say uncertain or sort of quivering figure, and I think that's what draws so many people to that portrait in particular. Also, knowing it was his very last one, of course, kind of makes that even stronger as a way to, you know, to think about it in the grand scheme of things.
But you were not necessarily looking at unbridled ego.
No, although he had a lot of that too.
He did 40 of them, for crying out loud.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and you know, that's one of the things, you know, as an artist that Beckmann is also, you know, best known for. He was really, there are many artists obviously who portrayed themselves, and of course this is, you know, quite natural, right? All you have to do is kind of look in the mirror, and you've got your subject right in front of you. But I think Beckmann was actually a very deep, searching artist. He wrote in his diary every day, you know, and when you read those passages, you know, he was really thinking, very intensively about, you know, not just the work that he was doing, but also, you know, what he was experiencing. And he lived through two world wars, 10 years in exile in Amsterdam. I mean, these were not easy times.
Now, I'd like to refer, before we get to St. Louis, and I certainly want to spend some time talking about those connections, but I did want to talk about the immediate post-World War I time, in which he was held in very high regard, as I understand it. And then along came Adolf Hitler, and things changed quite dramatically. Why don't you just tell us how that change occurred?
Sure. So Beckmann, basically in the 1920s, is, you know, after the war, he has, as I mentioned, he had these kind of major stylistic shifts, and, you know, one of them has occurred, and he's really kind of found, you know, what's considered his own, you know, formal vocabulary. And these are these kind of distorted spaces, you know, the figures themselves, especially in the immediate post-war period, are, you know, they're... much thinner, sort of worn down types of figures, and the paint itself is also much thinner, and, you know, almost in some of the paintings feels almost like the graphic arts that he was interested in. And so he's working, he's teaching in Frankfurt, he's going a lot to Paris, he's really kind of planning his sort of major debut on the international stage, and at the time in the 1920s, you know, Paris was the way to become known internationally. And then, you know, we start to get a backlash in Germany in the 1920s already, and certainly by the early 1930s, where promoters and artists who are identified with, you know, more avant-garde modern tendencies are being sort of, they're being criticized in the press. And Beckmann really feels the final blow of that in 1933, when he actually loses his teaching position in Frankfurt as, you know, National Socialist cultural policy, you know, tries to push push those people out who they feel aren't sort of in line with the ideals of the new regime. And by 1937, I mean, Beckmann actually thinks, you know, he might be able to make a go of it in Germany if he's just, you know, kind of lays low. He moves to Berlin to, you know, be more anonymous. And by 1937, you know, after the policies have certainly hardened in Germany and plans already for the Degenerate Art Exhibition are underway, museums are being, artworks are being removed from the municipal collections and so on, and Beckmann's works are among those. He then realizes there is really no way he can stay and continue to work in Germany, and that's in 1937 when he goes to Amsterdam.
Well, Hitler did call him degenerate, and you mentioned the Degenerate Art Exhibition. What was that? Was it an exhibition of the art that was objectionable at the time?
It was, and in fact, you know, we talk a lot about the Degenerate Art Exhibition as if it was sort of one exhibition, and it was actually a massive traveling exhibition sort of program that went over many, many years in Germany. But the first instance of it was in Munich in 1937, and it was actually kind of put together out of these works that had been removed from the public collections across Germany, and was basically curated to vilify modern art. So even the way that it was installed in Munich, you know, pointed to sort of avant-garde installation practices, you know, basically made fun of the way in which that art had been exhibited. Oftentimes, you know, they were then putting works of art under a kind of category that they took issue with, so let's say religion, and they would show modern religious works of art, and basically say this is not, you know, this is not how we see, you know, Christ to be depicted. This is not how we, you know, value the female body, and so on and so forth. And so really it was propaganda to convince the public that, you know, this was an error in sort of the wrong way for German art to go. And they actually offered an exhibition at the very same time in Munich that then presented sort of the ideal that the National Socialists were promoting. And so you really had these kind of two ends of that argument. And that sort of term degenerate, you know, did not sort of come out of nowhere. It had been sort of in the discourse for a very long time.
So he is off then to Amsterdam, where he spent 10 years. We'll get him to St. Louis in a moment. Was he productive in Amsterdam?
Pardon?
Was he productive in Amsterdam?
He was very productive. In fact, he was more productive than he was at any other time. And, you know, maybe that has to do with the fact that, you know, he really couldn't do much else. At a certain point, his travel was restricted, and he had found a home with his wife, Kwapi Beckmann, where he had a large old tobacco storeroom where he could paint, and during that time produced an incredible amount of work. And one of the important things about Max Beckmann was that he still kept a lot of his connections from Germany and to Germany, and also to emigre dealers in the United States. And so he remained in some way, you know, to the best of his ability, connected, and was therefore able to actually continue at least selling his work, but not exhibiting it, obviously. And a lot of it was, you know, sort of stored away until, you know, the end of the war.
How did he wind up in St. Louis?
Well, he was actually hoping to emigrate to the United States much earlier. So already in 1940, he'd looked into coming to the United States, and that didn't work out. And then it took until 1947 because he was considered then, you know, as a German in Amsterdam, he was considered initially a sort of enemy alien. And so sorting out the kind of visa things took a while. And by 1947, he actually had several offers to come to the United States, and chose to go to Washington University of those various offers, because he'd heard, or he'd understood that, you know, St. Louis was a cosmopolitan city. And he felt it was a place where, you know, where he could imagine working. And at first, actually, it was only for a year. And then he was able to stay on in St. Louis for another year, and then was offered a position in New York, and then went there for the final sort of almost 2 years of his life.
And during that that time, the couple of years that he was here in St. Louis, was that the period at which he met Morton May, who was so helpful to him here?
Yes, he did. He didn't meet him right away, which is so interesting because Beckmann came in 1947, and also the St. Louis Art Museum did a major, Max Beckmann, it was then the City Art Museum, did a major Max Beckmann retrospective, which then also traveled around the country, and that was a very important exhibition for the American reception of Beckmann's work. But Morton de May didn't meet him until early 1949, but he'd already actually purchased a painting by Beckmann and then wanted to meet him and arranged to have a portrait painted, a portrait which is also now in the St. Louis Art Museum collection. And that's how they got to know each other. And then May continued to collect Beckmann's work even after his death and amassed the largest private collection of his work in the world.
We should point out for listeners who don't know that Morton May, of course, was the man behind the May department store chain, which is very, very famous here and in other parts of the country. What was it about Beckmann, do we know, that so appealed to Morton May?
That's a great question. I mean, he actually looked initially also more broadly at German Expressionist painters like Ernst Ludwig Kirchner and Otto Müller, and eventually those artists also entered into May's incredible collection. But it was really Beckmann where he put his greatest efforts and, you know, amassed really just quantitatively the most paintings. At its height, his collection totaled 58 paintings, which is, you know, an artist who's painted around 800 canvases, you know, that's a pretty significant number. And I really think with Beckmann, it was this sense in many ways, or at least I argue in the book, May wanted to collect him comprehensively. That means, you know, really from those early works, you know, all the way through to, you know, the very most current work that Beckmann was painting. I mean, basically he would paint a still life and May would buy it, you know, the next day off, you know, it was still wet, you know, and he said, yep, I'll take that one. So he was really interested in this comprehensive collection because I think, you know, he saw what, you know, what many have seen in Beckmann, that there is this incredible development and change and reaction to, you know, not just the historical context, but also to, you know, the development of modern art over those years. And Beckmann, you know, embodies that in many ways. And that's, you know, I think that whoever sort of, you know, is interested in Beckmann's work, it kind of, you know, it doesn't sort of let you go. And May was definitely bitten by the bug.
Where are the other 19 paintings that May had at one time?
Those beyond? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that would be a very... We'd need another whole program for that. he had quite a few, which he then would sell again to buy other works, not just by Beckmann, but by other German artists. He also would trade work for amassing also his large pre-Columbian collection, which is now also in the St. Louis Art Museum. So I spent a lot of time actually sort of tracking, you know, which paintings entered the collection and which left the collection. And luckily, the May archives at the St. Louis Art Museum are incredibly good, and May kept very good records himself. But many of the canvases are now in museums, both in this country, in private collections, and also in Europe. So they've kind of spread in the intervening years.
Well, let me become absolutely crass in the few seconds we have left and ask, how much does a good Max Beckmann painting go for these days?
Oh, well, more than certainly you or I, and more than most institutions can afford. I mean, I think the last, I don't want to misspeak, but the last major sale was, you know, more than $20 million.
Ah, well, you're right. It is more
Beckmann
than
canvas.
You're right. It is more than I or probably you can afford.
Save your pennies. Yeah. Save your pennies, Don.
We're going to have to stop it right there. Lynette Roth, thank you so much for being with us. And I should point out that Lynette will be giving a free lecture on Max Beckmann and his work at the Art Museum this Friday at 7 p.m. We'll have full details on our website. She is the author of the book, Max Beckmann at the St. Louis Art Museum. Thank you so much for being with us. And we look forward to seeing you when you're here in St. Louis.
Thanks, Don. It was a real pleasure to talk to you today.
And for me as well. Lynette Roth, thank you. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about Missouri Governor Jay Nixon's final State of the State address, which you can hear tonight at 7 o'clock on 90.7 KWMU or at stlouispublicradio.org. We'll also take a look at Winter Opera St. Louis's production of Mozart's Così fan tutti. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.